Psalm 139, let's read through it together. O Lord, Thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my downsitting, my uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down, and art acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, Thou knowest it altogether. Thou hast beset me behind and before, laid Thine hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is too high, I cannot attain unto it. Whither shall I go from Thy Spirit, and whither shall I flee from Thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, Thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, Thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall Thy hand lead me, and Thy right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me. Yea, the darkness hideth not from Thee, but the night shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to Thee. For Thou hast possessed my reins. Thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise Thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are Thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. My substance was not hid from Thee when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect. And in Thy book, all, in the way that it writes out is all my days, which before any of them were fashioned, were written out, that our days were written out ahead of time. Verse 17. How precious also are Thy thoughts unto me, O God. How great is the sum of them. If I should count them, they are more in number than the sand. When I awake, I am still with Thee. Surely Thou wilt slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, ye bloody men. For they speak against Thee wickedly, and Thine enemies take Thy name in vain. Do not I hate them, O Lord, that hate Thee? And am not I grieved with those that rise up against Thee? I hate them with a perfect hatred. I count them mine enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, and know my thoughts. See if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Psalm 139, a psalm of David, broken up into four stanzas. The first six verses speak about the fact that God is all-knowing. Verses 7 to 12 speak about the fact that He is ever-present. Verses 13 to 18 speak about the fact that He's omnipotent, He's all-powerful, He's creator. And then the last six verses about the fact that He is holy, He is completely righteous. Now, a lot of theological stuff. And when you read the commentaries on Psalm 139, they say this is a theological treasure trove, that it gives to us four short sermons on God's omniscience, that He's all-knowing, He's omnipresent, He's omnipotent, and He's omnirighteous, that these truths are there. I don't believe David is approaching it like that at all. One of my favorite Hebrew scholars said omniscience is a pompous word. It can give us a category to put God's thoughts in without touching our own lives. He said there are those who never think about God. They spend their whole lives in this world. They hear about God. They curse God. They use God's name in vain, but they don't ever seriously sit around and take any thought for God. And they come and they go, and they die as orphans, lost. There are those who think wrong things about God, either through religious dogma or superstition or some homespun theology that they say is good enough for them and God knows, and they think wrongly about God. There are those who think correctly about God and do nothing about it in their lives. They know doctrinal truth and they're right, but they're dead right. And there are those like David who see in the most beautiful and gracious theological truths, application. How to bring all of that down to his own life. This is a man who had sinned greatly. He had succeeded greatly. He had tremendous victories, tremendous defeats. He had fallen. He had gotten back up again. He had struggled in his family, struggled on the battlefield, had victories on the battlefield, struggled in the battlefield of his own heart and his own mind in tremendous ways. And somehow looking back at all of that, he's able to make these observations. 48 times in 24 verses, he uses a personal pronoun, I, me, my, making application of these things to his own life. 28 times in 24 verses, speaking to God as thou, thee, thine. 6 times it's, O Lord. 3 times, O Lord. 3 times, O God. It is intensely personal and intensely applicable as he looks at these truths. We will look today at the first 6 verses. If the Lord tarries over the next 4 weeks, we'll cover the whole psalm. David in the first 6 verses is basically saying, Lord, you know me. And 13 times he uses a personal pronoun in the first 6 verses in regards to that. He's astounded. You know me. Doesn't see a room full of people, a crowd. He sees a room filled with individuals. He knows me and he knows you. In fact, he says, Lord, you have searched me. It means in the root, it is either to pierce or to penetrate. Lord, you have pierced me. You have penetrated me. But is in the sense of scrutinizing and investigating. Lord, you have thoroughly investigated me. You have scrutinized. You've penetrated me in the sense to know me. It was used sometimes in this age of, when the psalm was written, of mining, digging in the earth to find a vein of gold or a vein of silver. Lord, you have searched me. You have known me through and through. And now he's, in the next 5 verses, going to take that out in different directions, what that means, to be known by God. In fact, he says, you have searched me, and you know, you'll see the word me is in italics. There's no object to the verb there. It just says, Lord, you have searched me, and you know. You know. When I'm sitting around thinking nobody cares, you know. When I'm sitting around thinking I like to strangle this guy, you know. When I'm thinking, but I did my best. I thought I did what everybody wanted me to do, and oh, I'm getting all this flack. I'm going to get ulcers over this. I do my best, and this is what I get, and I can't explain it to anybody. Lord, you know. My struggles, my sorrows, my joys. You know. You have searched me thoroughly to the intent of my heart before the intent was born. He says of Jeremiah, I knew you before you were formed. To Jeremiah, I knew you before you were conceived. That's gone way back. Sends Gabriel to Zechariah and Elizabeth to tell them about John the Baptist before he's conceived, what he's going to be like, what he's going to do. Now that's somebody who really knows you. They know you back that far. I remember when you were a kid. No, I remember when you were an embryo. No, I remember before you were an embryo. Lord, you have searched me. You have plumbed me, investigated, known me thoroughly, pierced me through and through. And you know, Lord, I am the object of your all-knowingness. It says in 1 Corinthians that the Spirit searches the deep things. The remarkable thing about this is David is saying it in such a way that he's saying, Lord, you've searched me, you know, and you still love me. That's the thing he's amazed with. You know me, and you love me anyhow. There's other people around me say, hey, he's a nice guy till you get to know him. Lord, you know me thoroughly, and you still love me. You know what I have need of before I ask. It tells us in Matthew chapter 6, verse 8. Before we even ask, he knows what we have need of. That's knowing us. That he knows us better than we know ourselves. How many times as we're growing in Christ and spiritually, we do something and we're shocked at ourselves. I thought I was through with that. I thought I had whooped that temptation. I never thought I'd do that again. And no, he knows. He knew. And with his knowing, he puts parameters around us to keep us, to protect us. Now, I think that must really bug the devil. Because he doesn't know everything. And he can't change 666 to 667. But God knows everything about us. He has plumbed the depths of our being yesterday, today, and has already plumbed the depths of our being tomorrow. And searched us out completely. And knows. Thou knowest my downsitting, verse 2. My uprising, thou understandest my thought afar off. Lord, you know that when I go to bed, you know when I get up. You have stooped down in your omniscience to the most mundane activities of my life. Lord, you know that I'm a organizational freak, and that every night of my life, I have to watch the 10 o'clock news and go to bed immediately when it's over. I brush my teeth ahead of time. I get everything ready so I can just... And you know I get up at the same time every day. You know my when I go to bed and when I get up. Or, Lord, you know no matter how hard I try, I never know when I'm going to get to sleep. And you know what I say inside my mind when the alarm clock goes off in the morning. That I wouldn't say out loud. You interpret all of my groans when I stand up and get this bag of bones. Oh, ooh, ah, you know what all of that means. You know it before I groan it. You know my thoughts afar off. Now, the grammar can go in either direction. It can mean, here's God in heaven. Whatever great distance that is, and he knows our thoughts from there. That may be a grammarist point of view, but it's out of context with the psalm. The next six verses are going to say, whither do I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? Wherever I am, Lord, you're there. So there's nothing in the psalm about him knowing our thoughts from a great distance. What it's saying is he knows our thoughts when they are at a great distance. What that literally says is he knows our thoughts before they're formed. Pre-funk. That's the Hebrew word there. You know my thoughts pre-thunk and post-thunk. Now that's knowing somebody. Lord, you know me before I even think the thought. Before I know that I'm going to think the thought. You're already saying, oh no, he's going to get in a fender bender tomorrow and I know what he's going to think. Ay, ay, ay. Or I know what he's going to think when he hears this. There's twice in the Gospels where it says of Jesus, and knowing their thoughts, he knew what they were thinking before they thought those things. It says of Ananias and Sapphira that the Lord knew their thoughts. They were claiming one thing and actually doing something else. And Peter said, you're not lying to man, but to God. He knows our thoughts before we think them. Now, that's amazing. Because I look out and I see this crowd. But how many of you have flown into Philadelphia on a clear night when it's dark and look out and as far as you can see, all you can see is the lights twinkling of tens of thousands, millions of homes and businesses and shopping malls. And you have to understand that it's telling us that he knows. When every person in all of those environments goes to bed and gets up. Those millions. He knows those millions, their thoughts, before they think them. And after they think them. And has known it for 1,000 generations. And that's just one city. What about this country? Hundreds of millions, or the world. That God knows the minutia of over 6 billion lives. The hairs on our head being numbered. Not counted. It doesn't say this, you know, this guy's got an average, 180,000 hairs. I could see this guy over there. It's a lot easier to count him. He's down to about, you know. No, that's not what it says. It says the very hairs of our head are numbered, that each hair has a number assigned to it. Oh, that guy over there, he just lost number 10,034. He knows the minutiae of our lives. Not of ours only, but everyone around us. Not everyone around us this morning, in this city, in this world. When a man stoops down to get a glass of water, he knows. When he thinks a thought that he shouldn't think, of lust or anger or a gracious thought, let the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord. And he knows them pre-thunk. Oh, you tell me, come on. No, see, this is where atheists and agnostics are born. Because it says down in verse 6, this stuff is past finding out. It's too wonderful. We're talking about God. And that's when somebody says, don't give me that. That's impossible. Sure it is. Unless you're God. He knows. And David's not struggling with the theological truth of it. But he's finding comfort and assurance in the reality of it. Lord, you know. You've watched me these years running through the hills in my palace, fleeing from my own son Absalom. Lord, you know, when I lay down, I both lay me down and sleep, for the Lord has sustained me. Both then 10,000 in my right hand. Lord, you keep me. You know when I get up. And you know my thoughts, Lord, before they're formed, before I know them. Because of that, thou compassest my path and my lying down, and are acquainted with all my ways. Thou compassest, yours might say surrounds. The idea is literally from the Hebrew verb to winnow, and is to separate, to throw the chaff and the grain in the air, and let the wind blow the chaff away, and the grain falls back down to the ground. It is also used in the sense of sifting, because that's the same process of separating. Lord, you have winnowed my path, and my lying down is my couch. You've winnowed my path and my couch. In other words, God hasn't just known things about you. God has been active in your life. God's foreknowledge is never benign or static. That would deny his very nature. It tells us in Acts chapter 2 that Christ was crucified by the predetermined counsel and foreknowledge of God. And there's a, for those of you that might care, there's a Granville Sharp rule there in the grammar that says that God's predetermined counsel and his foreknowing are the same thing. That God never foreknows without activity. He doesn't stand idly by foreknowing. No, that God acts. And David is not struggling or arguing about theology. He's saying, Lord, you have winnowed my path and my couch, my public life and my private life. You've known it ahead of time. And because, Lord, you know when I get up, you know when I go to sleep, you know the most mundane and minuscule things of my life. You even know my thoughts before I think them. Because you know me that well, Lord, you have taken my life ahead of time. You've thrown it up and let the chaff blown away. You have removed from my life any insurmountable obstacle. Lord, there will be different things. There will be days that I feel crushed. There will be days when I feel like I can't go on, but there will never be an insurmountable object in my life, because you have sifted those things out of my path and out of my couch, out of my public and private life. Lord, I may get broken and out of that know things of your nature that I would never have known. I may be more attached to heaven, setting my affection on things above and not on things of the earth because of brokenheartedness. But there will never be an insurmountable thing in my life. He has put no thing in front of us, it tells the Corinthians, that we can't step over. In his foreknowing, he has winnowed our public life and our private life. He knows what we're like when we're in front of people, how we're going to think, and he knows how we are when we're alone on our couch. We go home and flop on a sofa. We're spacing out. He knows what we space out about before we space out about it. He's got a whole pre-thunk category there. And it says that he's fully acquainted. He is completely familiar with our ways. That if it's a familiarity that he has stooped down the way a parent does with a child to be completely familiar with our ways. Winnowing our lives. Giving direction. Now, of course, he does that because if he knows our thoughts before they're formed, he knows our habits, he winnows our path, he's active, he sifts, and he does that because he knows that there will be things born out of it. Verse 4 says, "For there is not a word in my mouth, in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. Before I say something, he knows I'm going to say it." Well, of course he does. That's because he knew it when it was pre-thunk. So if he knew you pre-thunk it before you thunk it, then he knew what words it was going to give birth to. Well, that's only a matter of time. See, he created time. When he created the world, he put the time-space continuum into motion, so he's master over time. He's the one who is, but he's the one who was, and he is the one who is to come. So there is no confusion on his part, but he knows the thought before you think it. And because he knows the thought before you think it, he knows the word that's going to be born of it before you say it. And because he knows ahead of time, he winnows your path, because he knows if he left you to yourself, your path would be a mess. He involves himself in your public life and in your private life. They say the average man speaks enough words in a day to put a small paperback volume together. They say that in a lifetime, average lifetime, the average man speaks enough words to fill a college library. And a woman, it's twice that, they say. 2 college libraries. Hey, wait a minute. I could get somebody here who knows the statistics. I'm not making this stuff up. This is real. And I wouldn't take that as an insult. I mean, if you've raised boys and girls in the same house, you understand. Girls are thousands of volumes ahead, a whole half a library ahead before a boy says anything. Your little boy's playing. What are you doing? You know, they haven't said a word. They haven't said a word yet. When my guys were little and their friends were over, they all call each other by last name. Hey, Fosh. Hey, Poker. Hey, you know, they just, you know, girls are first name basis. They speak language. They talk, you know, definable words and sentences, and it's much different. So just the head start puts you a whole volume, you know, volumes ahead. But God knows all of those before they're spoken. Knows them all before they're spoken. Lord, I wish I hadn't said that. I knew you were gonna. What can I learn from it then? Help me. Help me. You don't just pre-know, you winnow. Sift some of sift some of my future of that stuff. Would you please, Lord? Well, that's all right, because he knew you were going to ask him. He knew that when it was pre-thunk, that you were going to ask him to pre-sift. David says, Lord, you've known everything before I've spoken it. You've known every kind word that I've said. You've known every spiteful word. You've known the mean things that have come out of my mouth before I thought them, before I formed them. And the gracious words, Lord. You knew what I was going to say when I smashed my thumb with a hammer that I didn't even have to think about, that I had to repent of. And you knew, Lord, when I was doing my best to encourage, to exhort, to build someone else. You know my highs and my lows, my failings, my successes. And yet in spite of all of that, it says in verse 5, Thou hast beset me behind and before, and laid thy hand upon me. You would think with all of our failures, incongruities, the inconsistencies of our lives, that the one thing he would want to do is keep his hands off of us and not touch us. He says, Lord, you have beset me. 90% of the time in the Old Testament, that word is besiege. You have besieged me before and behind. In the negative sense, an invading army would besiege a city. Sometimes that siege would last a year or two. They would camp around the city, cut off water, cut off food, and slowly but surely break their way into that city. And no one would be able to escape because they were surrounded. This is in a positive sense that God has besieged us, looking out, protecting, keeping us, surrounding us. And he has set his hand upon us to guide and to constrain, to instruct and to chasten. Lord, you have plumbed the depths of my being. You know me better than I know myself, and Lord, as good as I know myself, I'm disappointed about lots of stuff that need to be Christ-like, that aren't Christ-like. And yet you love me anyway. You know. In fact, I can hardly categorize, Lord, your knowing. You know the visible things of my life, when I get up, when I lay down. Lord, you know whether I put the toilet paper coming off the front of the roll or off the back of the roll. You know whether I wring out the washcloth and hang it up over the bar, or roll it up in a ball and throw it in the corner where it can grow mold. Lord, you know whether I drink out of the milk bottle when nobody's looking, or I use a glass. You know, Lord, the absolute most practical and mundane things of my life, you've stooped down to know them, the hairs of my head. And in all of those things, Lord, it might be just trivia to anyone, you know my thoughts before I think them, before when they're afar off, before I know them. You have sifted my life, Lord, privately and publicly. You know my path and my couch. You have winnowed, Lord, pre-winnowed. The circumstances, and you are completely familiar with all of my ways. And there is not a word that comes into my mouth, Lord, that you haven't known it before it was formed. You have known it completely. Because you know me that well, Lord, you have surrounded me. It's the only way I could be safe. You've besieged me. And you've put your hand upon me. But it is not the hand of a drill instructor, and it is not the hand of a police officer. It's the hand of a father. It's the hand of our Father. Your hand is on my life. How important to know that in these days of terrorism and war and uncertainties. You know, Lord. He's going to say down further, all my days before any of them are formed, they're written out. You know, that's knowing. You know my thoughts before I think them, my words before I speak them, my actions before I live them out publicly, privately. You've winnowed all of that and put it through your sieve, and you sifted my life. There are good works foreordained, Lord, that I should walk in them. And you've put a hedge about me. You've besieged me, and your hand, Lord, is on my life. I don't know, you know, there's 6 billion people on this planet, Lord, but your hand is on my life. You know me. Your hand is on my life. That's remarkable. And he says this, such knowledge, it is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain unto it. Such knowledge is surpassing or unattainable, it says. Then it says, when it's too high, it's the same idea again, unattainable, can never be reached. And then again, it is too high for me. He doesn't have a problem with that. There isn't anything in that that keeps him from being comforted or assured of the truths of those things, though they're unattainable intellectually. Your ways are above our ways, or the heavens are above the earth, so are his ways past finding out. We have endless ages of arguments about election and Calvinism, and Arminianism, and man's responsibility, and predestination. David says, those things are not attainable. They are not for intellectual file. Martin Luther said in his preface to Romans, there's a doctrine for every season in a man's life. Who were these audacious young Christians who dared to soar the heights of eternal depravity and predestination and election before they understand sin and temptation and the flesh? Surely they must fall, because there is a doctrine for every season in a man's life. David says more than that. He says these things are unattainable. That you have plumbed the depth of my being, Lord, you know. But you know so completely that it is beyond human comprehension. You don't just know when I get up and lay down. You know my thoughts before they're thunk. How can that be, Lord? You, Lord, have winnowed my life. You have sifted things out ahead of time, in public and in private, my couch, my path. You're completely familiar with all of my ways. You know my words before they're formed in my mind, let alone formed in my mouth. And you do that with every human on the planet, in every age. And you have besieged me and put your hand upon me. This is too wonderful for me. It is unattainable. But there is nothing that is preventing David from receiving the comfort and the assurance that we are to receive of these divine attributes, because he knows the heart of God, not the extent of his being theologically, but his heart. And he looks back and sees God's faithfulness and God's love. And the same way an infant or a toddler doesn't know the extent of his or her parents' life, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, you have a toddler, they could care less about any of that. They don't know your yearly income. They don't know how much you're paying in taxes. They don't know how much you're paying for in diapers. There's none of that. But none of that keeps them from receiving the comfort and assurance they receive when a father or a mother puts their arms around them and hoist them up onto their lap. And the warmth of that. Josiah yelling at me, wanting to get back to his dad. Not able to comprehend that I'm as nice a guy as his dad is. But those truths, unattainable to him at this point. Incomprehensible. Father, your hand is upon me. Your hand is upon me. He knows our past, our present, our future. He knows. The truth of that can't just be something we write a thesis on, or we file in a drawer. If it is not applicable to our lives, then there's no sense God revealing it to us, because the purpose of His coming is relationship. All things are created for His pleasure. His pleasure is fellowship. That was the cost that heaven paid. For fellowship. And He is sovereign. And He is never idle in regards to His foreknowing. The extent of that I'm still discovering. And I'm filled with wonder. But I am not dependent upon my ability to comprehend that further than any theologian has ever comprehended it. Because I know in whom I've believed. I know His presence when I sit alone with Him. I don't need the Jesus seminar to tell me whether this is the Word of God or not, because when I open it and tears come to my eyes and He speaks to me, I know that I know that I know. And if that's the only way I can ever describe it, who cares? Because His presence, I know that He knows me. He chose me anyway. I know that He knows me. And He works with me anyway. I know that He knows me. And He calls me His son. I know that He knows me and He wants to spend eternity with me. I know that He knows me. God knows me. And He knows you.